You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
He is joining me from Gippsland, which is about 2.5 hour drive from Melbourne. So we're joined by the Australian astronomer, Chris Stockdale, who has recently received the Page Medal, which is a really, really awesome award for contributions to astronomy. Good morning to you, Chris. How are we?
Morning, Zach. Good, thanks.
Nice. Things over in Gippsland, relatively cool. Everyone's doing pretty good there.
Yeah. In Gippsland, the weather been a bit cloudy lately, so not much in the way of observing from my place, at least. It's been good, and yeah, the award was certainly. Not expected, but it's a real honour to receive it. I'm not a paid astronomer. I'm an amateur astronomer. So I just do this because I have a real passion for the hobby.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they say amateur astronomer, but I read that your setup is worth $100,000. So, I mean, you can't be that amateur. Yeah. You're the real deal, man. You're the real deal.
Real passion. Real passion. It's something I've always loved.
We'll talk about that more in a second. I wanted to know, have you ever been confused with the astronomer Dr. Chris Stockdale from Marquette University in Milwaukee? Have you ever been mistaken for him?
Yep.
That's happened quite a lot.
Just a couple of times. Emails across from people say, that's wrong, Chris Stockdale.
Exact same name, same interest or field, but yeah, just different country, different person.
Yeah, and he works in a slightly different field in the astronomy as well, so he can. Just a little different.
Yeah, totally. It's a pretty big time for astronomers with Artemis 2 obviously launching and coming back to Earth. It's definitely born a new generation of space lovers. Did you have a keen eye on the Artemis 2?
Yes, I was watching what was going on. I didn't see the launch, unfortunately, but I certainly did see the splashdown, and it brought back memories for me how the Apollo era, in terms of watching the parachutes open and the capsule come down and the recovery. But one big difference is the footage and how close it was, and the coverage was way better this time around, than because the errors are a lot smaller than what they used to be.
Totally.
In locating the actual landing spot.
Another big difference is that back then there were fewer flat earthers out there denying that they were leaving the planet. I've seen some real nuts people on the internet saying that, you know, obviously it was a fake launch or whatever. It's absolutely astounding that they can say that.
One of the guys at the conference where I was awarded the medal put up a slide. Professor Fred Watson, who actually gave me the medal, in his speech, he had a diagram of the solar system with all the planets with this flat Earth going around the sun. It was very good.
That's hilarious. Again, before we talk about the medal, there's one more small thing I want to mention. Another pretty big thing for astronomy right now is that the film Project Hail Mary with Ryan Gosling has been really making waves across box offices worldwide, and it's, again, breeding a new generation of massive space nerds, which is so awesome. Did you go to see that film?
Yes, I have seen the film. Yes.
What were your thoughts?
Not my most favourite, but I really did like his The Martian, though. I really enjoyed.
Martian's great.
Yeah. I mean, it was good, and I think I loved Rocky. I thought he was
he's a cutie.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Really cute. He's a very, very cute little character. But when you were watching science fiction films, are you sort of, I don't know, like continuously testing the scientific reality of what they're doing, or are you like, it's a story, I have to not think about this?
Yeah, I do have to do the latter, because I do test the science. If it's science we know, I wanted to respect that. If it's science that could realistically, you know, 1,000 years time or something, It's a, well, who knows? It's a possibility. Yeah, that's fine. Go with the flow.
Yeah, totally. But let's talk about this medal. It's pretty incredible. You were presented it, the Berenice and Arthur Page Medal, two-ish weeks ago on April 4th at a National Australian Convention of Amateur Astronomers. Are you still on a high from that event?
Yes, was amazing. I know I've done a lot of work, but it's a real honour to receive this very prestigious award, because it's actually delivered from the Astronomical Society of Australia, which is the body of professional astronomers, and it's recognition of the scientific contribution that my work's done. But in particular, it's about the exoplanets, or planets going around other stars.
Yeah, and you've got a pretty awesome system for being able to detect those. Your planet stays locked on a single patch of sky and looks for dips in the light of a star, sometimes just a percent or a percent of a percent dip in brightness, which means that a planet has passed in front of a star. From there, what happens? How do you get more info on the planets? And what can you tell about planets without analysing them immediately with your telescope?
As you said, what I do is I end up with a what's called the light curve. So I take all of the lots of images of the star, and I measure the brightness of the star on the photograph. So I've got software that does that, and then you end up with a small dip. So I've got other software then that helps me calculate the actual depth of the dip, rather than eyeballing it or anything like that. And I make sure that it all looks real, and it's not associated with some cloud passing in front or something else going on. And the information then is sent off to MIT and NASA. So there's MIT, and there's a group there that are actually working with this the test satellite. So the candidates actually come, the candidates are the ones that I have a list of ones that are available for my time, my location on the Earth. And I select one that's suitable there for me, not too faint, the dip's not too small, because some of the dips are even smaller than what I can pick up. Even 0.4% sounds small, but they go to a tenth of that. So and they might be a small planet going around a larger star. And I then select those, do the imaging on a clear night, then analyze the images, photographs, come up with a report I put together, submit the data into the database, email the report off, and then next target. And from there, a professional astronomer, the supervisor of the group that I belong to, it's the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite Follow-Up Program Science Group 1.
Rolls off the tongue.
So, yeah, it does. That's a real mouthful. But Dr. Karen Collins actually reviews what I sent through, and if she wants any more information or wants me to redo something, she'll get back to me on that. Otherwise, she may take information from what I've done, and because the timing might have just changed a little bit. We might think it will occur at a particular time, but it might move on a little bit. Because you get things that are called transit timing variations. So these events are called transits. And another planet in the system can actually move that timing around a little bit as the gravity from one planet affects the other.
Wow.
And so these variations, which we rolls off the tongue a bit easier, is TTV.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking for those. We're looking for the depth of the actual transit, and to be sure about the depth, you want multiple observations. Also, we observe in different colours because it could be an eclipsing binary star that's in the field. And the eclipsing binary star, so that's two stars going around one another, wow, orbiting one another.
Wow.
And typically they won't be the same colour. So one will be a bit redder, one a bit bluer than the other star. So one's a bit hotter, one a bit cooler. And the result is that the dip will be a different depth in the two different colours. And so if that's that difference is sort of big enough, it's sort of, yeah, it's likely an eclipsing binary. And there'll be other, we don't rely just on one measurement. There'll be others actually look at it as well.
Mm. As you mentioned before, you do a lot of collaborations. You collaborate with MIT, yep, NASA's Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, and you also collaborate on planet hunting with Las Cumbres Observatory Global Telescopes. How did you start collaborating with these different organizations?
Yeah, so I was invited into to join the test group in 2018. The satellite was about to be launched. So that's a satellite that actually orbits once every 2 weeks around the Earth, but it goes out as far as the Moon and then back in close to the Earth and then out to the Moon again, sort of much like what the Artemis did, but it's in a different direction.
Yeah.
And it
you're good.
From there, I did some practice on the observations, and I had actually been involved with some of the people with the previous program, which is in the media release, the Kilo Degree Extremely Little Telescope, and joined the group and basically started observing, and Dr. Collins organized training sessions online, so we had Zoom sessions where we would actually go through the software involved, little tips and tricks, and the software's been improved over time.
Mm.
And it's basically a case of practice makes perfect, or nearly so. But in 2020, I started analysing the images from the 1 metre and 0.4 metre telescopes of the Las Cumbres Observatory Network. Was doing that as well, so quite a few cloudy skies at one stage, and I thought, I'll, you know, I was asked if I wanted to do it. Yeah, no worries. It's something else. And there was also COVID then as well.
Sure, no, you're not doing very much, are you?
Yeah, not doing a lot of that. But I end up, I've analysed over 800 of those observations. So there's, you know, be tens of thousands of images, and a lot of those telescopes are following up on fainter targets. So some of the dips on those probably about as small as 0.05%.
Oh, my goodness.
So really tiny. But compared to me, yeah, they're a much bigger telescope. They're much higher, so they're above all the lower-level pollution or anything that's around, and the moisture down low.
Mm.
Clear skies, 300-plus days a year, this sort of thing. So I've made about 400 observations with my telescope and submitted information regarding about 200 different targets.
Man.
I've done 800 analysis, and each of these analysis takes, if it's really quick because it's nice clean curve and there's nothing wrong with it, it's 2 hours, but I could actually easily spend 8 to 10 hours doing the analysis work.
Wow.
For one target.
Man, I saw, I think it was an ABC, they said this was a side hustle for you, but really it's another job.
It's a full-time yes. job. It's an unpaid job, yes. Yeah, certainly a bit like that.
I've got a bit of a quick-fire question. What's the biggest exoplanet, the most distant exoplanet, and the coolest exoplanet that you've found?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I'm not actually sure of the answers. I do know the hottest one was, and I think it still is the hottest exoplanet. I don't think there's been one found since, but from the Kilo Degree Extremely Little Telescope, a similar system that picked up a dip in light, and I was doing work for that group, which Dr. Collins was part of as well, and the group found, now I at that stage had done a lot of observing to the group, but the group had found a an exoplanet that was so close to its host star that it was surface temperatures way over 4,000 degrees.
Ooh.
And that paper, so it's the, at the time it was the hottest known, and I think it's still maybe, that resulted in a paper that was published in Nature, which was, you know, quite exciting.
That's huge.
But, you know, I certainly, I know myself, I've not observed with my instruments any Earth-sized ones, but I have Neptune size, and certainly lots, quite a lot that are Jupiter size or bigger.
Mm.
Some of the bigger ones would be perhaps a few times the size of Jupiter, so they're actually very large planets.
Man, that's so cool. And do you get naming rights for these planets?
No. They've got really boring names.
They do. I read this. They go like KMT 2020 BLG 0202L. That's a real exoplanet. Yeah. You know, can we get in exoplanets cooler names? Is that on the cards for 2026?
No, I don't think it'll work. Yeah, they're all these. Well, in the test ones, they're TOI, which is target of interest, and it'll be TOI 199B. B being the first planet found around it. If there was a second, if happened to find a second one, it would be C. Even if, but they're not in order of out from the star; they're in order of discovery. So, you know, B, C, D, E. And if it's a two-star system, one of the ones that I did work on was it was actually a binary star with the planet going around the pair of the stars, so it's a really complex system.
That's super complex, yeah.
Yeah. And another one where the star and planet is going around another star, so that might be something like, I don't know the number, but say, you know, TOI 100, capital A, little b. So it's the brighter component of the stars is the capital A, and then the planet is a little b.
True.
It's, pretty boring names.
Maybe we can get some cooler names down the line. But thank you so much for coming on the program this morning today, Chris, and talking to
me. No worries, it's a pleasure.
All about astronomy. Congratulations on receiving the Page Medal again. Without your work and work of other people like you, we'd have so many more gaps in our knowledge about the solar system. Well, in space, other solar systems, exoplanets. It's such cool work you do, and yeah, I wish you the best.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Been a pleasure.
Been a pleasure too. All right, folks, that was Chris Stockdale over from Gippsland, which is very, very close to Melbourne. We're talking to Chris about him receiving the Page Medal and his astronomical efforts. We're going to play...
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.